Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser. Every day we're bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance, plus technology, politics, so much going on in the world of politics, economics, and it's all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors. You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio. And be sure to watch us, too, on YouTube by searching Bloomberg Global News.
The two things that bother people, they say, well, maybe we did this too quickly. They need to understand the speed is really a reflection of the extraordinary scientific advances that have been made that allowed us to do things in weeks to months that normally would have taken several years. That was not compromising safety, nor was it compromising scientific integrity. The process that went into deciding the safety and efficacy was both independent and transparent. We need to make sure people understand that.
All right, that, of course, you know that voice, Dr. Anthony Fauci, right? It's one of those few voices that everybody knows.
Yeah, you don't even need to. Everyone knows Fauci at this point.
Exactly. He was talking, though, at the third annual Bloomberg Health Summit and, of course, addressing concerns that are real about people maybe not wanting to take the vaccine, concerned about safety. Let's get into a discussion with Dr. Seth Lederman, back with us, co-founder, CEO, and chairman of the New York-based specialty pharmaceutical company, Tonix Pharmaceuticals. Seth, back with us. He is on the phone in New York City. Dr. Lederman, nice to have you here with Tim and myself. Vaccine and what we've seen, a lot of news coming down, the UK starting, there are still some concerns. How do you see it right now?
Well, first, I agree with Dr. Fauci that the progress on the two or three leading vaccines has been remarkable. I mean, it is just awesome to be less than a year out from the first time this virus was recognized and have, you know, clinical trial data on, you know, at least four vaccines. But I do think that we have to temper our expectations. While the data are intriguing so far, there are really four things that haven't been shown. There has not been shown, there are questions about the duration of protection. There are questions about whether these vaccines will protect against death and really severe symptoms. There are questions about whether these vaccines will block forward transmission. And finally, there are questions about safety. So while I share Dr. Fauci's enthusiasm, I think that we all have to remain cautiously optimistic and await more data.
What are the questions about safety? It's not something that we've heard a lot about.
Well, safety, you have to think of two different groups. You have to think about the older people in, you know, retirement communities who represent one population at risk, and then think about younger people, for example, you know, college students, healthy young adults, you know, particularly those without pre-existing medical problems. So for the older people in retirement communities, any vaccine will have some effect on their health. So I think we're going to have to look at a large number of people to see how they react to this vaccine. Now, for the younger people, you know, let's call them college students with no pre-existing conditions, they're really at pretty low risk of developing serious consequences anyway. So a lot of information is going to be needed before we can really recommend that it would be beneficial to them in terms of their own personal health to get any vaccine.
But we got a lot more information certainly yesterday from the FDA, and I know there's a big review going on tomorrow that will ultimately decide, I guess, whether or not there's U.S. approval and we can move ahead. I mean, my understanding is from a vaccine that you tend to know the worst of it in terms of any kind of side effects within the first month.
I wish that was the case, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, using these products potentially in hundreds of millions of Americans, let alone people all over the world. So I think that you need larger samples. And by the way, you know, the kind of approval that they're getting now is really, emergency use authorization. It's not full FDA approval. And the guidelines for full FDA approval really require that they're going to have to show protection, you know, quite a bit longer period out from vaccination than where they are now.
Well, that's sort of, at this point, that's sort of a worry for later, because the idea here is to get as many people as possible, especially those vulnerable people, inoculated as soon as possible, right?
That's correct. But the question is, will these vaccines have to be administered repeatedly?
Right. So would you take this, Dr. Letterman?
Well, it's an interesting question. First of all, I'm unlikely to be a candidate because they're being, you know, essentially reserved for people at risk groups. And I think that what the pediatricians and other groups have done, working with the CDC to work out an equitable and efficient way to distribute the first vaccines, is great. So it's really a theoretical question. I wouldn't qualify. Although I'm a doctor, I'm not currently a frontline healthcare worker.
You know, Seth, let me just, because we're running out of time, unfortunately, I got about 45 seconds here. You guys, though, are working on a vaccine, right, with a live COVID virus?
Well, yes, we're working on a live vaccine, but ours is based at Tonix. Ours is based on a live viral vector.
Right.
And we're designing it so it provides longer duration of immunity. And, you know, Merck is also working on two live viral vector vaccines. So it's a different approach.
Right.
But I think ultimately COVID is going to become endemic. So we're going to have to think about vaccinating people for the long term, and even people who haven't been born yet.
Yeah, it's definitely an upheaval when it comes to how we treat this. Dr. Seth Letterman, thank you so much. Co-founder, Chief Executive Officer, Tonix Pharmaceuticals, with us on the phone from New York City. I mean, you know, what we hear, Tim, right, is that we expect we're going to need multiple vaccines.
Yeah, I mean, even with what we see with Pfizer, you have to wait 3 weeks to get the second dose of that.
Right. So it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Interesting thoughts.
Yeah.
Different perspective.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stiefel.com. That's STIEFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser from Bloomberg Radio.
Let's bring in Naomi Nix. She is corporate influence reporter at Bloomberg News on the phone from Washington, D.C. So, Naomi, we were expecting this, but now that we've got some of the headlines, what jumps out at you? What do you think is the most significant? What could this mean for Facebook?
Well, it's interesting. So the Federal Trade Commission specifically highlighted Facebook's purchase of WhatsApp and Instagram in the lawsuit that it filed just moments ago. And part of what it's calling for is a potential unwinding or divestiture of those companies by Facebook. That would be a significant alteration of Facebook's business model and one of the growing parts of its company. And so that's really interesting. And what they're saying is, you know, that Facebook essentially looked around for potential competitors, rivals, and then just, instead of competing against them, bought them up.
But I mean, there's no question that that's what happened.
They do.
Yeah, right. That's the way it goes. I guess the question is, to what extent does the federal government, do these states actually have a case here?
That is the question. And one of the defenses that Facebook will likely say is that, for instance, in the case of Instagram, that Instagram became Instagram because Facebook bought it. And that actually at the time, Instagram wasn't as much of a competitor in the market sense, and that Facebook was the one to help it grow and become such a popular.
I think that's a fair argument. Mm-hmm. I mean, Instagram was tiny. It had a staff that you could count on fingers and toes back then when Facebook bought it in 2012 for $1 billion. And it was a huge acquisition back then.
Right.
But I think a lot has changed since then. And I do think Facebook has a case that says, hey, Instagram is what it is because of our investment.
Right. And I want to just bring in, like, is the consumer hurt in all of this, Naomi? Doesn't that ultimately what those bringing the case, all of these regulators and state attorneys and the FTC, the lawyers for the FTC, don't they have to prove that consumers were hurt in the process?
Yes, and that's one of the tricky parts about some of these tech antitrust cases. Because these platforms are free, lawyers can't rely on the usual measure of harm that they would normally use, which is price, to establish that a company hurt competition by hurting consumers. And so in this case, they're going to have to be really specific in their market analysis in defining the market, in defining the consumer, and in defining the harm, which might use less traditional measures.
I'm just going to remind everybody, Microsoft, right? When all of this first came down, how many years of lawsuits went on and on and on? I mean, who knows how long this could ultimately, Tim, take?
And it's a really good point. And I think people look back at what happened with Microsoft as creating this environment for all these startups that we're talking about right now when it comes to antitrust to actually succeed. And in the meantime, you have Microsoft turning into one of the most valuable companies in the world again.
Right, exactly. I mean, Naomi, this is just the beginning of what's going to be probably a very long process. Just got about 20 seconds here.
It will be a very long process. And the key for Facebook will be, how does it maintain its competitive rigor in the marketplace while fighting this issue on the regulatory front?
That is always something that analyst investors, right, jump on and be like, they're distracted. It's not a great thing, right?
Yeah,
the legal overhang.
Yeah. And as Charlie said, Facebook stock down 3%. So it's not like investors are that concerned.
No, exactly. Naomi, thank you so much. Naomi Nix, corporate influence reporter at Bloomberg News, on the phone from Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, I was going to just take a quick check. What is Facebook doing this year? They're up 33%. Yeah. So, I mean, listen, we all understand kind of how this goes.
Yeah.
So we'll keep a watch on it. But definitely moving lower here a little bit.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser from Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser along with Tim Stenovic of Bloomberg Quick Take. And listen, this is going to be a great story, great conversation, because we just got the headlines about the FTC suing Facebook for illegal monopolization. Let's get that out. So they are certainly on the radar. And we love our Bloomberg team because they understand companies, they understand nuances to when they do a deal or potentially what this could mean.
Yeah, and this is a perfect time to get Kurt on the show because he writes about WhatsApp in his most recent Bloomberg Business Week story. And Joel Weber also joining us live from Brooklyn right now. Hey, Joel.
Hello, and yeah, you couldn't have scripted this timing probably any better, but you know, we're always thinking ahead, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And Kurt had been so patient. He filed this story months ago, and then we were like, yeah, well, we're going to do it soon, just trust me. So no time like the present, Kurt. So story, you know, we often try and have what I consider like a strategic lens on our stories. And, you know, at Facebook, this behemoth that has, you know, basically made a series of acquisitions that is obviously has captured regulators' attention, hence the news today. But one of these is WhatsApp, right? And WhatsApp, they've basically added to their portfolio. It's huge internationally, far bigger internationally than here in the U.S. But the big question has always remained sort of like, how could they go about monetizing this? And when Facebook does get around to monetizing things, you look at Instagram, and it has just become a cash cow for Facebook, and it really relies on advertising. But the question has been sort of, you know, WhatsApp is not Instagram, so how would you go about making money off of it? And that seems to be the big priority now at Facebook. So walk us through what their plan seems to be, Kurt.
Yeah, to your point, it is not advertising in the way that we know from the newsfeed or from Instagram. And part of the reason of that is because it's hard to get the same level of data in a private messaging app that they are able to get from those other services. So it's harder to do the targeted ads that we're used to. So in this case, what Facebook wants to do is really turn WhatsApp into a commerce and payments platform. And so imagine that you know, you're interacting with a business, perhaps in the way you do today. You might send them an email. You might actually pick up the phone and dial a 1-800 number. They envision a future in which you're doing all of those interactions on WhatsApp, and you're using the service to maybe place an order, make a payment, handle a customer service issue. And if they are sitting at the middle of all of those interactions between businesses and consumers, they see a really big business opportunity there, especially in markets outside the U.S. where people are already kind of doing this behavior. They just don't have the structure in place to actually capitalize on it.
So Facebook bought WhatsApp for close to $20 billion just a few years ago, back in 2014. Kurt, what's the time frame for when we're going to start seeing Facebook actually monetize this huge purchase?
Well, this is something we've been talking about for years at this point. And when you pay $19 billion for a company, you have to answer those questions usually sooner rather than later. Facebook's ability to continue to grow its ads business has bought it a lot more time, I think, than many people thought they would have to make money from WhatsApp. But what we saw in 2020 is that they're really starting to kind of double down on this investment. They made a $5.7 billion investment in an Indian technology company called Jio Platforms. The whole idea there is that they're hoping that WhatsApp can kind of partner with Jio on a lot of this commerce and payment stuff. We saw them make an acquisition of more than $1 billion just last week of a customer service software company. And so the fact that they're making these big strategic investments and these acquisitions right now is a signal to me that we're going to see this idea materialize in a more real way, probably sometime in the next 6 to 12 months.
Kurt, before this FTC moved, you mentioned that customer service acquisition, that was the last kind of big story from Facebook. That was the purchase of a company called Customer. And as you write in the story, you know, that was met with basically crickets and kind of a shrug from everyone. But how could the customer acquisition and this nascent strategy with WhatsApp, how could that all sort of start to come together?
Well, the idea being that if you are, again, using WhatsApp already to communicate with your family and friends, it makes sense that you might want to just kind of bring your business or retailer relationships, if you want to call them those, that's kind of an optimistic word for Facebook. You'd have a relationship with these businesses, but you might imagine if you bring all those into one app, right? And let's pretend that you're a large-scale retailer. You're fielding, you know, questions or complaints from people on Twitter and Instagram and WhatsApp and Facebook. You kind of want to bring all of those into one place so that you can manage them. That's what customer does. And so Facebook is buying this with the idea that perhaps if they can make it easier for businesses to, you know, message with people on one of their platforms, including WhatsApp, you know, that they could make the whole Facebook ecosystem a lot more valuable to businesses around the world. And to them, that's an incredibly important thing to not only grow, you know, their ads business, but build out that payment stuff that we were talking about.
Okay, so these are all kind of nuts and bolts questions and blocking and tackling and all that stuff. But can we talk about the drama? Because you do have some additional drama about when WhatsApp was acquired, the drama that unfolded between those founders and Zuckerberg, that is an ongoing thing that we love to report about. Sarah Friar's book, No Filter, about the Instagram saga was Financial Times Business Book of the Year. So I just have endless appetite to learn more about the drama behind the scenes and, you know, basically Zuck's inability to share power. What did you learn in the course of reporting this?
And what tech drama? Oh, my God.
Right?
Facebook drama.
Never heard of that before.
Like button. Totally. Like button.
I think that the very, very simple way to summarize this is to say that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg acquired a company from two guys who had the exact opposite idea of what they wanted to build. Whereas Facebook was building this thing that you shared publicly and they gathered your data and they showed you targeted ads, WhatsApp wanted everything to be incredibly private. It didn't want to read your messages. And most importantly, the founders said, we're never going to show you ads ever. That's a promise. Don't even worry about it. So how does a company that makes that promise then go sell itself to Facebook, right? That, those two just do not align. And so really once they got in the door, we saw a few years after the acquisition was closed that tension really started to build where Mark Zuckerberg is saying, hey, we want you to start building an ads business. That's what we do best. And these guys saying, hey, we promised our users we're never going to do that. We're not going to build what you want us to build. And ultimately, we saw both the founders leave in late 2017, early 2018. And it's just, you know, anytime you bring together clashing cultures like that, you're going to have a lot of issues.
That's why when there's ever a merger, we think about Salesforce and Slack. Like, this is a question we ask. Like, how is that integration going to work, right?
Because so often they don't.
Exactly, right. We see it throughout history. For those of you listening in New York, D.C., and San Francisco, watching on YouTube, Bloomberg Business Week, Tim and I, we're going to be back. If you're listening on Bloomberg 106.1 in Boston, Bay State Business is coming up next. Our thanks to Kurt Wagner, tech reporter at Bloomberg News, and to Jill Weber, editor of Bloomberg Business Week. Find more Business Week stories on the terminal and at Bloomberg.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser on Bloomberg Radio.
So you are listening to Bloomberg Radio, Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser, along with Tim Stenovic, a Bloomberg Quick Take, and you were on air live 9 and noon.
9 and noon.
You talked about stimulus.
Oh, it was the lead story for both of our shows today.
Yeah, I mean, we keep talking about this, that until we find out what's going to happen if we get aid, I mean, this is kind of crucial for so many Americans and really, I feel like, for the U.S. economy.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, up until now, really, I think that the story has been this disconnect between Main Street and
totally.
Wall Street. But it does seem like, at least today, investors are taking a little bit of a pause because lawmakers certainly seem to be taking their time to get this stimulus done.
They're taking a pause too. So let's get into it. Let's find out the latest. Eric Wasson is all over this. Busy guy, congressional reporter at Bloomberg News. He's with us on the phone from the nation's capital. So Eric, where are we? Because we just looked at Tim just sharing your latest story with me that both sides of the aisle are working on a compromise pandemic relief plan. So where are we in this process?
Well, there are different paths going on, but one thing that we've been keeping an eye on is this gang of 908, they're calling themselves their 908 coalition. These were eight senators from both parties, as well as 50 Republicans and Democrats, and they had come up with an outline for a $908 billion stimulus. The details were lacking, and they released a long-awaited outline of that today, but they did not have the two key provisions, the liability protections for companies and state and local aid filled out. It just was kind of a placeholder there. So that was kind of a bad sign. We're talking to Joe Manchin at West Virginia just now, and he's saying, you know, by tonight, perhaps we'll have some resolution on this. Now, for congressional leaders, they don't really like these side groups to form and sort of take matters into their own hand. They like to seize back control, and we're hearing really from, especially from Republicans, they would like this to go be more of a leader-to-leader discussion. I think that's where we're headed. Next week is the deadline for government funding. We have a few more days, but I think that's when we'll see a deal come together, and it probably won't be this gang, which has at least floated some ideas, but probably won't be able to close the deal.
Well, now, it's not just liability protection for companies that's holding up this on Capitol Hill, right? It's also Republicans are sort of unwilling to budge when it comes to what they're saying are bailouts of state and local governments. What's the progress mm-hmm. there?
Yeah, well, so that was an interesting move from Secretary Mnuchin of the Treasury. He put forward a $916 billion plan that has $160 billion in state and local aid in it. And that apparently, according to our sources, had McConnell on board. Kevin McCarthy said he was on board, that's the top Republican leader in the House. This is really the first time that they've like, sort of gone on record supporting this concept. Now, there were other parts of that proposal that were problematic for Democrats. It eliminates the $300 per week plus up for unemployment insurance that had been talked about. Democrats have been seeking $600 per week, and this just would zero that out and instead give a $600 payment to most Americans.
Eric, I want to pause on that because that's a really big deal for people who aren't working right now.
Huge.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, and it's not really targeted. Democrats are saying, look, why are you giving payment to people who are employed? We saw in the spring a lot of people just pocketed that, didn't even really spend it necessarily, while, you know, shortchanging by $4,000 or so those who were unemployed because it would be four months of benefits.
Is it a clean measure or is it getting bogged down on a lot of side issues?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean by clean. I mean, they're the outline of the bipartisan thing has many different provisions. It has small business aid, $300 billion or so, aid for child care centers, broadband, internet, education. It's a grab bag of measures, you know, but it is also tied to this government funding bill, a giant $1.4 trillion bill that's needed to keep the government open for the rest of the year. You know, they're going to extend that deadline for a week on December 18th, and that has been bogged down by a lot of small issues indeed. But they're more likely to be resolved. If you remember, the president continues to push for a border wall. That's one of the signature issues there, as well as the money for immigration raids. So we're seeing those get worked out separately on a separate track, but it all has to come together by the 18th.
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering how much, you know, kind of horse trading was going on here. Cut to the chase, Eric. Do you think we're going to get something before the end of the year? Because I, just like Tim said, I mean, Americans who are, you know, facing eviction, you know, just have nowhere to go anymore.
You know, I actually am optimistic. When I saw the Mnuchin offer and the Republicans come into the $900 billion range, you know, this is really within the scope that the bipartisan group have been talking about, the level that that Pelosi and Schumer, the top Democrats, had endorsed. So on the numbers, they're really coming together there. There are policy differences, you know, but I'm more optimistic than I had been.
I don't know about you, Carol, but it doesn't it feel like there's this more sense of urgency, at least with what we're hearing from lawmakers? And Eric, is that what you're experiencing on Capitol Hill? Do they seem like there is this sense of urgency to get something done ASAP?
Well, I wouldn't say ASAP, but by next week, because Congress always operates on they always say it doesn't operate on the clock, it operates on the calendar. And the fact that they need to go home for Christmas, they need to fund the government, that creates a deadline. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to herd cats, when you're trying to get all these people with very different viewpoints to finally just, you know, cut bait and do a deal, you need that kind of deadline. That's what's causing the urgency.
Hey, just does it come down to also, Eric, a red-blue thing, that blue states are hurting a lot more than red, and that's why we're not seeing Republicans play ball as much?
I mean, that's certainly part of it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you have a sense that Republicans feel like blue states are mismanaged, that they are super generous to their state employees, have huge pension unfunded pension liabilities, and that the states will just take this money and pocket it. So there's a feeling of resentment on that,
yeah.
But you know that's certainly a part of the issue there.
I mean, I have such a hard time hearing that because, you know, I live in New York and I'm from California.
I don't believe it. And I'm just putting it out there.
When I hear lawmakers use that line of argument, I think about the federal tax contribution that large blue states,
California, New York,
make,
right?
Compared to the federal tax contributions that other states make,
and money that goes all around the country.
So the argument rings hollow with me.
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, you're preaching to the choir, but it does make. Go ahead, Eric.
I mean, they more point to Illinois or other. There are other governments that are more famously unable to really be fiscally responsible.
Right.
But you know, yeah, it's certainly that Democrats make that argument that a lot of the blue states contribute more federal tax dollars than they get back.
Well, listen, thank you for keeping us up to date, because we are seeing multiple stories, multiple headlines, and watching this process. So hopefully we can get something done here in 2020.
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, exactly. Eric Wasson, congressional reporter at Bloomberg News, on the phone from Washington, D.C.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
We'll see what maybe our next guest has to say about it. Tom Plum watches the markets, really hones in on specific names specifically. He is President and Chief Investment Officer at Plum Funds, and the Plum Balance Fund, top performer in the 98th percentile for the past 5 years, returning on average annually about 13%. Let's bring Tom in. He's on the phone in Madison, Wisconsin. Tom, nice to have you here with Tim and myself. How are you? How do you make sense? I don't know. I'm always curious what you think about some of these IPO issues in the IPO market that we've seen this year.
Well, obviously, it's been the IPO market has been pretty exciting for in the tech area, but you do always wonder about the valuations, and then eventually you may have some overhead as some of the original families and some of the original investors basically start looking at selling some of their stock over the next few months. But normally what we have been seeing is some real fast bounce and then a little digestion after that. The valuations, of course, are just like we're seeing in all the tech area, where they're high compared to historical numbers, but they certainly may not be high compared to what the expectations are.
Tom, what are clients coming to you with right now? People whose money you manage, what are the questions that they have, and what are the answers that you're giving them?
Well, I think, you know, right now a lot of people are concerned about whether or not the economy is going to advance next year. We hear a lot of people concerned. Even today you get bounced around by, are there going to be a type of a stimulus program or not? Is it going to be something that's going to affect all people? How does it affect me? We do expect the economy to recover next year, and usually in a recovery time that's pretty good for the stock market in general. But what we warn people is that, you know, there may be a rising tide, but it doesn't raise all boats, because some areas of our economy are boats that have big holes in their hulls.
Yeah, we've definitely seen that play out. Just, you know, we continue to have conversations over the past 9 months. There are definitely winners and losers in this environment, even as we take out records on the major equity averages. So, Tom, I'm curious, in your fund, which has done consistently so well, certainly, as I mentioned, just even over the past 5 years. So where are you committing new money? What do you like in this environment?
Well, we continue to think that the pandemic really just accelerated some secular trends, and that we're going to be in a digital economy for a long, long time, and it's changed how we do everything. So, yeah, we look at what if, you know, we talk about greenhouse gases, and we talk about all the different things we need for energy efficiency, and that's going to be a big important point for the new administration. And we look at who's going to enable that. And one of the companies that we look at is a company like Autodesk, which is the software company that provides all the architects and engineers with visualization and all the new digital tools that they need to address the current market. They provide a lot of economies. We know that there's probably 10 to 30% waste in materials on every new construction project because they overbuy different things. With Autodesk virtualization, you can actually minimize that quite a bit. But there's also going to be an incredible amount of energy put to reducing energy footprint. There are some people who think that the buildings that we have are greater than the automobiles as far as causing greenhouse gases and CO2 emissions. So if they're 30% of the world's CO2 emissions, there's going to be a continuous effort to reduce that, and Autodesk is a company that could do that.
We have seen, you talked about secular trends just being accelerated in online payments, purchasing, direct delivery, the idea of using digital wallets. I know you argue that's something that's here to stay. How do you get exposure to that?
Well, Tim, it's not just here to stay, but it's going to continue to grow and accelerate. And we definitely think that there's still a long path in front of PayPal and Alibaba and Amazon and companies like that. But if you look at some real opportunities, Latin America, for example, Brazil has historically shown about an 18% online growth in their purchasing, and this year it accelerated to 44%. And then the leader in that industry, Mercado Libre, had over a 70% revenue growth in the last quarter. So we see the company that can combine fintech with managed logistics so that they're basically a lot like an Amazon. They deliver product in 1 to 3 days in a place like Brazil, and you have an incredible amount of underserved young people who are going to continue to use this.
That is a $76 billion market cap company.
Wow.
I'm looking at the ADRs. It looks like the trade here, and it's up 169%. And Tom, you see more growth here, just quickly.
Yes, we do. I think it's a lot like saying Amazon 10 years ago or 5 years ago, where people thought it was all behind them, when there's still an incredible road in front of them.
Yeah, that's definitely maybe a CEO we have to reach out to, find out what they're up to.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. This is why we love Tom. He just brings these companies, definitely things like Adobe that we know that's a top holding for them, but also Mercado Libre. Interesting to see what they're up to.
Thanks so much for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or at Bloomberg.com. And be sure to check out our daily radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio. And be sure to watch us too on YouTube by searching Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.